that's got supposed to get, and I ain't got nothing yet.
Act 4, Diaspora. While hundreds of thousands of Gulf residents evacuated after the storm had followed the whole thing from afar, Cheryl Wagner left for Gainesville, Florida. From satellite photos, she can tell her house is flooded. She hears it's 7 feet of water. Over this past week, we've gotten dozens of emails at our radio program from people in this situation, and they all pretty much say the same thing, how bizarre it is to be indefinitely exiled from their homes, normal lives, and now to be an evacuee in the larger world.
We've been advised that when we go back to New Orleans, my boyfriend and I need to get guns, mean dogs, or both, which seems ludicrous to me. But people where we evacuated to over here in North Central Florida have offered us a shotgun. We got offered a shotgun before we got offered a generator. One of the people calling to tell us to get a shotgun is a normally laid-back musician friend who used to have a weekly gig in the quarter singing Cuban love songs in falsetto. A few days ago, he bought a shotgun in Baton Rouge, where he evacuated to, and is now calling my boyfriend and advising us to do the same. I have 5 dogs, and I'm bringing the meanest-looking one back, he says. I just bought a shotgun with a sweet pistol grip. Last week, he also called to report rumors that people from New Orleans were raping and looting the mall in Baton Rouge. You're a person from New Orleans, I thought, but didn't say. Right after it became clear we were not getting home, I predicted the totally predictable. That people in Baton Rouge would immediately start cringing in the face of what they consider to be the black mongrel hordes and loose people of New Orleans. I say this knowing the people of Baton Rouge and the rest of Louisiana have been breaking their backs with generosity and hospitality and kindness. I know many white and Cajun people and fishermen with airboats helped rescue their black and white New Orleans neighbors from attics. People from Baton Rouge are showing up at hotels and sweetly paying strangers from New Orleans bills. My mother in Hammond was asked to open up her washing machine to state troopers' underwear. Still, some folks are giving with one hand and holding a gun with the other. Seems nobody wants a bunch of poor people, black, white, Cajun, whatever, moving to their neck of the woods. Seems it is fear of the have-nots and poor as much as racism, which of course it also is. So now we're here in Gainesville, listening to New Orleans expat news radio webcast through tinny computer speakers, squinting to see my watery house on satellite photos, getting crappy emails from friends crying because they killed their cats, and watching TV. Someone desperate called us and said, "Can you please text message Stan and make him get off his roof? He's up there with Luna and another dog and won't come down unless they'll take the dogs, too." It's strange to think of all my New Orleans people spit out by the storm, all over the South and country, in diaspora, getting terrible phone calls and cable TV migraine, too. Before the flood, New Orleans was the place where Southerners sent their laid-back people who can't or won't get with the program. Artists, gay relatives, eternal optimists, funny hat wearers, and intellectuals. I'm one of the above, and we're in New Orleans for a reason. To get away from the Baptists, but still get to live in the South, where we're from. But where are Southern outsiders supposed to go who are exiled from their place of exile? I don't want to arm myself with a gun or a leaf blower to face the future. People ask what it's like to lose your house and your friends and your life and your town and begin to look scared when you answer. They want to care, but they can't. They look at you and worry for themselves. Drenched in the compulsory cheer of the college town of Gainesville, I feel like a leper from Carville or the bereaved at a Southern funeral. Family friends slide you white envelopes with money in them. Then everyone around you puts on an ugly orange and blue outfit, straps on their foam fingers, and heads out to a Florida Gators football game.
Cheryl Wagner normally lives in New Orleans in Mid-City on South Cortez Street. She asks if someone there has a canoe. Please go and check out her house. Act 5, Displaced Persons Camp. Last August, a Category 4 storm, Hurricane Charley, devastated parts of Florida. And FEMA built a big trailer park for people whose homes were destroyed. It was near an airport outside Punta Gorda. At one point, over 550 trailers were there. And when our staff looked into it this week, we were surprised to find out that a full year later, over 500 trailers are still there with more than 1,000 people. And also, just this week, we read that in the New York Times, a FEMA official was saying that these kinds of mobile homes, like in Punta Gorda, outside Punta Gorda, may be the standard for people displaced by Hurricane Katrina. Our producer, Lisa Pollack, called down there to see what it's like.
Like almost everybody I asked to describe the FEMA mobile home park, Bob Hebert starts with a disclaimer.
It is better than no housing, but for some folks, it's very unsettling, it's depressing, it's deplorable.
Hebert is the director of hurricane recovery for Charlotte County, Florida. Like everyone else I talked to, he described a dreary mini-city, nothing but endless rows of identical white trailers in a vacant lot by the county airport.
But it very much is just like a trailer park storage place. It's like a manufacturer where they're just all lined up waiting to go, except these are actually occupied and hooked up, and it's a village by itself.
It looks kind of like some military camp in the desert.
This is Jennifer. She didn't want to give her last name. She, along with her husband, three kids, and a dog, have lived in the FEMA park since just before last Thanksgiving.
There's no grass. There's no trees. It's all white, gritty sand, and the wind will whip through the trailers, and you'll just get pelted with sand.
The FEMA park wasn't supposed to be homey. It was functional. After Hurricane Charley destroyed 11,000 residences in the county, lots of people needed places to live, and fast. For that, the trailers were perfect, says Hebert.
Because they got a lot of people in there in like 30 days, people that were just kind of living in cars, and because there were no other places for them to go. They were on the streets, or they were living with other people, or whatever. So, I mean, it was a lifesaver when it happened.
Someone called me from FEMA and said, are you still interested in one of the mobile homes? And I said, yes, I am. And he said, well, okay, you need to go down there to the site tomorrow to sign your paperwork. They have a house for you.
That's Kim. Last December, when she got that phone call, she was desperate and out of options. She, her husband, and four kids rode out the hurricane, huddled in the shower stall of their rental house, the ceilings crumbling above them. After the house was condemned, the family spent 2 weeks in a crowded homeless shelter, then came 3 months in an RV, the kind people tow on vacation, 30 feet long, all six of them living there. So by the time they got the FEMA mobile home, 70 feet long, with three bedrooms, it seemed like a mansion. They could live rent-free, paying only utilities while they looked for a place of their own. The problem is, 9 months later, Kim's family is still there. Every month, a FEMA agent comes by to ask her what she's done to get out. To keep her lease, she has to prove she's been working on it. And every month, she gives the same answer. She's called public housing, she's combed the ads. But in Charlotte County, there's not much that she and her husband, a Walmart manager, can afford. So far, the government's let her stay, but the pressure's getting to her.
These people that come to our house and they are on us about, you know, what are you doing to get a place and what are you doing to do this and what are you doing to do that? And, you know, it really just irritates a lot of us because, you know, we didn't ask for this and we're stuck here and there's nothing else that we can do. And the way they talk to you, it almost makes you feel like, you know, you did this to yourself.
Well, the real problem you have is that most of the rental properties were lost in the storm.
That includes almost all the low-income units, says Bob Hebert of the county government.
The ones that survived suddenly became more expensive and unaffordable because other people that had the means to pay for them rented those properties. So it's a very long-term problem because unless we can find a way to house those folks in some housing that they can afford, they're going to have to move somewhere else where they can get a house and they can get a job.
Some places don't want kids.
Jennifer's had problems finding a place, too.
We have a dog, and now finding a place that'll let us have the dog. I mean, I know some people, you know, don't understand, but, you know, like, oh, just get rid of the dog and move into, you know, one of the apartments that accept dogs. But after everything my children have been through, moving to two different schools, moving four times in the past year, with everything else they've lost, I couldn't imagine taking their dog away, too.
Crime and drugs have been a problem at the FEMA park, and there aren't many places for kids to play. Lots of people stay only because they have no choice. And others, everyone I talked to agreed, aren't really trying that hard. It's easy to imagine that this is what Louisiana could look like a year from now. Thousands of people warehoused in trailers, stuck in makeshift camps on the edges of towns. I asked Bob Hebert if he worries about the idea of more FEMA trailer parks like this one, and he says he does.
I think what needs to happen is that if they're going to do that, which they will, and it's a good short-term solution, they need to think about what happens next month or the month after, and like have a phase two plan. They got to very quickly start working on a strategy to break that down and move people on, just for the sake of the people. I mean, what we're really talking about is humanity here. We're talking about human beings that need to get back to some normalcy before they can get over this.
So how long is FEMA willing to keep housing hurricane victims? In Punta Gorda, they're giving residents till February, 18 months after the storm. Then, FEMA says, they'll stop funding the trailer park. After that, what happens is up to the county, which is still figuring out what to do. It might help people buy their trailers and relocate them, and it might keep the park open and let people rent. It's not clear exactly how it'll work or where the money will come from. It's not going to be easy.
Lisa Pollack.
Sitting here in limbo, waiting for the tide to flow. Sitting here in limbo, knowing that I have to go.
Our program is produced today by Julie Snyder, Sarah Canning, and myself, with Alex Bloomberg, Diane Cook, Jane Feltus, Amy O'Leary, and Lisa Pollack. Elizabeth Meister runs our website. Production help from Todd Bachman, Chris Ladd, and Laura Bellows. It is Laura's last day on the program, which is a very, very bad day for us because she's done such good work here. Laura, we all wish you the best. Guest DJing for our program today for Mr. Nick Spitzer, whose music show American Roots normally broadcasts out of New Orleans. He chose songs for us from his exile at the music.